Welcome to Between the Trenches. Week 3 is finally in the books. We look forward to week 4. But first, we're going to recap what happened in week 3. And I'm joined once again by Mitch Sanderson. Mitch, how was your weekend?
Pretty good, buddy. Not the greatest week for my Saints. But, hey, we picked pretty well last week.
Hey, we did better. Hey, 500 was our goal, and we went beyond that.
Way beyond that.
And, Rob, how are you doing, buddy?
Like I said to Mitch, I was just happy I wasn't there to watch the second half of that Cowboys-Falcons game.
You see, the first time we don't watch the game together, and what happens?
That's what I'm saying, man. Fox and the Fiddle, Sunday night of this week. I think we should all go, for sure.
It's going to be an epic battle. Brandon Weeden versus Luke McCallum. Okay, well, I mean, I guess we might as well get into it. I mean, it's Tuesday morning. The Monday Nighter took place. The Chiefs took on the Packers, and the final score was 38 for the Packers, 28 for the Chiefs. Look, these Green Bay Packers, they are unstoppable at home. And
on the road, too, I think should be
mentioned. I mean, that's the thing, too. I mean, they are – I think Gruden brought it up. I think they had a little conference between him and Aaron Rodgers, and he asked him, it's like, why are you so dominant at home? And he's just like, I'm pretty good at on the road as well. And that's just the case for these Packers, man. I mean, 28 points for the Chiefs, but that really doesn't tell the tale. I mean, this game was – for the most part, over midway into the third.
Yeah, it was the Packers jumped out to a 31-7 lead, and the Chiefs scored some points late. We should point out, you know, Jamal Charles came out, and he had that terrible Thursday night game, and he came out, he said he was all ready to go on his Monday night debut on primetime on national television, and he played a pretty good game. He had 3 touchdowns, but that wasn't enough. We did see the Chiefs finally break that dreaded streak of no touchdowns by a wide receiver. Jeremy Maclin got in the end zone.
Yeah.
We had to figure that was just a matter of time, but it was getting ridiculous.
I was just going to say, I mean, some people I think were applauding them, but that's – you don't celebrate a stat like that. What was it, December 2013, I think, was the last time?
Yeah, it was 18 weeks.
Oh,
over 600 days or something stupid.
Jeez.
Like that. Yeah,
the ESPN did like a breakdown of like how many guys had caught a touchdown pass since then. J.J. Watt's caught like 4 or 5 touchdown passes. like 5 offensive linemen have caught touchdown passes in the NFL. So, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs get that kind of monkey off their back, I guess. But Charles came out after the game. He said that he felt like they were outcoached. And, that's rough speak for a team with got Andy Reid on its sidelines.
Exactly, yeah. He's probably one of the better coaches in the league. So, yeah, that's a damning statement. Now, I got to ask you, Mitch, like, I know that the game was kind of out of hand, but to see them kind of open up that offense, you notice that Alex Smith was looking downfield. He wasn't dumping the ball off like he usually does to Jamal Charles, but he was looking downfield to spread it out. And I like I said, I know the game was kind of out of hand, but Gruden kind of mentioned it. He thought that this was encouraging going forward for this offense. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're right. The game was kind of out of hand, so Alex Smith had to force the ball down the field. But that's definitely good for them going forward to have that as a part of their offense. We saw them in week 1, I thought, do a good job of getting the ball to Travis Kelce in the vertical game. But now we're starting to see it with Jeremy Maclin. Hopefully they can, you know, find somebody else, Jason Avant or Donnie Avery, to pick up the slack there on the other side. Because I think the problem right now for Maclin, we saw him last night, he's kind of going through a bit of a cold streak. He had a couple really bad drops. So
he ended up in that second half, though.
Oh yeah, for sure. But he's facing a lot of heavy coverage right now. So getting the ball down the field and spreading it out for Alex Smith is only going to do good things.
Right.
And that game kind of fit in with a group of games this weekend. Only 6 games were decided by 7 points or less. A lot of blowouts. The Patriots killed the Jaguars. The Seahawks beat up on the Bears, which we'll get into that a little bit later. We saw last week a lot of upsets, a lot of kind of crazy games. What did this week we saw kind of what we expected to happen.
Right, yeah. I mean, I was actually kind of thinking that maybe, and it sounds stupid now in hindsight, but I really thought that maybe the Jacksonville Jaguars might have put up just a bit more of a fight against the Patriots, but, I mean, this game was never in doubt. I mean, 51-17, the Patriots took it. Yeah, you're right. I mean, there were a few blowouts, some that went the way we expected them to. I mean, some of them just, I mean, the teams that we expected to win won, but just not in the fashion that we expected to. So that's kind of funny how those games ended up wrapping up. So
yeah, and one of those games we should probably get to right off the top is was the Steelers and the Rams.
Right.
And the Steelers have now lost Ben Roethlisberger for, we're not really sure right now. I heard initially it was 4-6, and right. Then it was 6-8, and now it could be more. So they're going to have Mike Vick come in and play, and they've got a really rough go this week playing Thursday nighter.
Yeah.
Short week for Mike Vick to get ready.
Yeah, I mean, with Big Ben, I hear it's an MCL sprain, so, I mean, at least he's still going to play this season. In terms of this offense, I mean, Mike Vick, he's an explosive guy. He's somebody who can obviously get the ball down the field, but you're right. The problem is that he doesn't have a lot of time to prepare and get ready for that Todd Haley offense. I mean, it's literally
been, you know, what, almost 3 years since he was starting games for the Eagles.
Yeah.
And last year with the Jets, he admitted when he came into a game that he just wasn't ready to play that game. So,
and it didn't look as though he wanted to start, because it's hard for me to believe that Mike Vick couldn't overtake Geno Smith in a quarterback competition.
Yeah, now that we see Ryan Fitzpatrick just kind of
right.
clean up that competition.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that wasn't the only injury we had. We didn't mention in the last show, but Drew Brees was actually injured.
We thought he was going to play through it, but, I mean.
And when we look back, when I look back anyways, at the earlier games, I think he was probably playing injured throughout the first 2 weeks of the season.
Right.
So we'll kind of see if he's optimistic that he comes back. But he's always optimistic about everything. So we'll see if he makes it back. He was, if you had a chance to go find it online, there's a good him on the sideline in the Saints game this Sunday was really entertaining. He was like, he was calling audibles at some point. He was like he was basically taking mental reps the whole time. It's good to see, you know, a guy like that still, you know, Drew Brees is one of the few guys that like he really loves the game, and he doesn't want to give it up.
Well, that's one of the things I respect so much about Drew Brees. He's one of the greatest leaders in the NFL right now. I mean, whether he's on the field or off the field, he's there motivating his team, getting them in the right position. So you're right. I mean, that's great to see from him. And I guess we should also mention some other injuries here. The hamstring. It was the downfall of some of the players on Sunday. Marshawn Lynch suffered from a hamstring. It doesn't look like it's going to be too serious. I think it was something where the game was in hand, so they decided that they were just going to let him sit the second half.
No, he didn't practice all week either.
Okay, there you go. And Darrelle Revis, he actually suffered a hamstring injury as well and left the game, didn't come back against the Eagles. So,
yeah, that could be a huge loss. Anytime you lose an impact corner, especially a corner like that, Revis, where the Jets are used to just putting him out there on Revis Island, that's a big loss.
Plus, Cromartie's not 100%.
No.
So your two best cornerbacks are not, you know, at 100% right now. So we'll see how that impacts the team going forward.
The other guy, your guy, DeMarco Murray, was out. That didn't seem to matter for the Eagles. They were able to get the win.
Yeah, well, Ryan Matthews, he played pretty impressive. I mean, the offensive line didn't do him any favors, but he still found ways to get yards. So it's going to be interesting when DeMarco Murray comes back to see what that workload is going to be for both of them. I'm interested to see what Chip does.
Yeah, and one of the guys we should mention, too, on the defensive side of the ball, Carolina Panthers, they're one of their best defenders, Charles Johnson.
That's right.
He's going to be out for a while, and the Panthers have already gone ahead and made a replacement.
Yeah, they addressed that issue right away.
Yeah, and I don't know how much it was them addressing an issue or how much it was the Bears kind of going through this new change. The Bears traded Jared Allen to the Panthers yesterday, and they also traded John Bostic to the New England Patriots. So they kind of came out and said, we're going, you know, they've gone from a 4-3 to a 3-4 this year. And they're, you know, certain players just don't fit those schemes. Jared Allen is one of those obvious guys. I felt like, you know, he's really, if he's got to drop back in coverage as a linebacker, that's not what the Bears, you know, that's a huge hole in their defense. So
he's a liability.
So they move him to a 4-3 where he's going to be more comfortable. Apparently John Bostic wasn't a good fit in there either. So I think there's more to come from the Bears.
Absolutely. I guess we were kind of talking about this off air, but my question is, does it make sense to be making these moves now? I mean, I get it. You kind of have to see live action to know exactly how these players are going to fit in your system. But you know, training camp goes by, preseason goes by, you really don't think that that would have been enough time to be a, to evaluate them then?
Well, I think it, I mean, they ideally, I think they should have done that, but that's not how it worked out for them. And you know, like, you look at the Bears where they are right now, they're really bad.
I think it's
like,
fair to
not,
say.
Like, they're fair to say, like, they're not favored to win any games with the injuries they have.
They
right
might be
now.
The worst team in the NFL.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say, you know, if they had a healthy roster, I wouldn't say that about them. But where they're at right now, yeah, they're probably one of the worst teams in the NFL. So, you know, making these, it's not a big risk, right? They can move these, they can ship these guys out right now and get draft picks, get what they need, and they can kind of build for the future. John Fox is not, you know, he's not going to wait. I think he's not going to wait for the offseason. That's too long. The NFL doesn't wait for you. These guys need to make – they want to keep their jobs.
Yeah.
They need to make moves quickly. So I don't have a problem with this. I think this is kind of fits into their system a little better. They did bring in a few guys. They brought Pernell McPhee in from Baltimore in the offseason who does fit. I think they did bring in some guys who do fit their 3-4. They just didn't bother to get rid of the guys that didn't fit.
Yeah, I guess that's my issue. Now, let me also ask you this. Jay Cutler, Alshon Jeffrey, Kevin White – they're supposed to come, well, in Kevin White's circumstance, they're saying that it could be a season-long thing.
Yeah, it's a little unknown right now.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that these three players, could you see them maybe taking longer to get back just because the season might be already in doubt? I know it's only 3 weeks, sorry. But do you think that that's something that they could, you know, prolong just so that they're 100% healthy and just because, you know, they're evaluating the rest of the players on the roster?
I think the team may want to do that. I doubt that the players want to hold themselves out of games. That's not very typical, especially guys like Jay Cutler. As much as we, you know, talk about, he's a very competitive guy. He doesn't want to be sitting on the sidelines. Okay. So I think, you know, for those guys, they're going to work just as hard to get back as fast as they can. But yeah, I think you're right. From the team perspective, if you know, if it takes a while for an Alshon Jeffrey to come back and they're still not 100%, and the Bears are, you know, 0-6. What's the point of rushing a guy back? I think that's a totally fair point to make. And, you know, we'll see how long it takes Cutler to get back. He may only be out one more week.
Okay.
And that could be that's a much bigger upgrade than Jimmy Clausen. Because,
yeah,
you know, we'll get to it now. The Bears were they played the Seahawks, and they were really, really bad. They had 10 possessions, 10 punts.
Wow.
I think they only made it past the 50 once or twice.
That is a rough one to have to watch.
But, you know, my point on this game was more of the Seahawks.
Sure.
Seahawks won 26-0. They only scored one offensive touchdown. They're currently tied with the Bears and the Rams for the least offensive touchdowns in the league so far.
Now, I guess the only encouraging thing about the offense is the fact that they finally got Jimmy Graham involved. I think he had
a
touchdown and maybe close, 70-something? I want to say it's a little over 70 yards receiving. But you're right. I mean,
They didn't have Marshawn Lynch, but they should have won this game 50-0.
Easily. I mean, you just mentioned it. 10 possessions, 10 punts. That means the time of possession had to be heavily favored in Seattle's favor, but so it just doesn't make sense that they weren't able to capitalize more often.
Yeah, well, they kicked four field goals, you know, and one they had the one touchdown. Tyler Lockett had another kick return touchdown.
There you go. I mean, that means that really most of their points. So you're talking about 19 points from the offense.
Yeah, and even those field goals, like with the field position they would have been getting, they kicked a 45 and a 48 yard field goal. Like those, I'd have to give those drives to the defense almost
for sure.
And Jimmy Clausen completes 9 passes, and they, you know, I was kind of disappointed with this group altogether. They had Thomas Rawls come in, the rookie. He had 100 yards. That's kind of interesting. But you know, this team was a team that we thought looked unstoppable coming into this year based on their performance of the last 2 years, and now they, you know, they've been a dud so far in my mind, even with this shutout win, a dud so far.
See, that's the thing. I mean, it's hard to evaluate the defense. Cam Chancellor came back. It's hard to evaluate the defense just because the offense was so putrid by Chicago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, until you face a more, at least an average offense, I mean, that's when you can finally say, okay, maybe this is the Seattle defense we saw coming into this season.
Yeah.
But
part of that defense is their ability on offense to run the ball and control the clock, I think, as well. And that makes it so much tougher when, you know, teams are down 14-0 and they have so much limited time of possession. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see how, like, Cam, this is probably a good game for Cam Chancellor anyways to get warmed up and back into it. So we'll see how he goes going forward. But offensively, you know, as a team, the Seahawks should be winning a lot more. And I know there's other teams out there that should be doing well as well.
Yeah, I mean, since we're on the theme of disappointing teams, my disappointing team so far has to be the Indianapolis Colts. You know, week two, they played the Jets, and I think everybody thought that, you know, that game against the Buffalo Bills, that was the Buffalo Bills defense just frustrating Andrew Luck and that offense. Week two, we kind of thought they would get out of that funk, but they faced a similar defense in the New York Jets, and the New York Jets really put it to them. Then they were traveling to Tennessee. They were taking on, a division opponent, and you figured, okay, this is when they finally get off the snide, and we're going to see that potent offense come through. But, I mean, it really wasn't until late. The final score was 35-33. You know, Andrew Luck led them to two drives late to be able to take the lead.
Yeah, and do you know what, though? Like, I don't think Andrew Luck gets those drives without Frank Gore. Because Frank Gore had over 100 total yards and two touchdowns.
Yeah, but you know what the thing is? A lot of those rushing yards came early. I mean, if we're looking for, like, heroes of this game, I'm not even going to say it's Andrew Luck. I think it's Dwight Lowry. I want to say the cornerback. Or one of the guys in the secondary, right? He had two interceptions of Marcus Mariota. One wasn't so much his fault, just because I think it was a tip drill that he, you know, I hate to put that on the quarterback, but I guess stat wise, how else are you going to be able to throw it in there? And then there was another one that Marcus Mariota, it was a poor decision. We'll put that one on him. But yeah, I mean, he to me is the hero of this game. Andrew Luck did not have a great game. I mean, he was 18 for 30, 260 yards, and two interceptions again. Yeah. So he's turning the ball over. He's turned the ball over every game.
Yeah, he should. He did have two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, three total touchdowns in the fourth quarter by the Colts. But the fact that was even necessary for them to win by 2 points is not endearing to Luck and the Colts.
Right. I mean, look, going into the season, I knew that this Indianapolis defense was going to be a bit of a liability. I just figured that the offense would have carried them. But look at these stats. I mean, Tennessee put up 433 yards of offense on them. They dominated time of possession, nearly 35 minutes of it.
You mentioned, too, for Tennessee, this is their third straight week in a row that they've had a different leading rusher.
Oh, yeah.
They had Bishop Sankey in the first week one, McCluster in week two, and now they have this young guy, Antonio Andrews, in his second year at a Western Kentucky, who I didn't even know that this guy was on the roster, and he ends up with 12 rushes for 49 yards and a touchdown.
Right.
But, Mariota, you know, we talk about how good this guy is, but you shouldn't be giving up 370 yards to a rookie quarterback.
That's the thing. Like, I think it's fair to say he probably played better than Luck in this game.
Yeah, you know, and if it's kind of sad to say, if he didn't make those kind of two mistakes, then –
no.
This game wouldn't have been close.
I don't think so. No, not at all. I mean, yeah, I don't know what to say about the Colts going forward. I guess what helps them is the fact that their whole division is brutal. I mean, they currently are tied for the best record in their division. The Texans, Jaguars, Tennessee, and themselves, they're all tied at 1-2 right now. So that's the thing. There's nobody wants to break free right now and take a hold of the AFC South. So,
you know, this is, we should mention too, is bad. They don't look as like they did last year, but they started off 1-2 last year as well. So, you know, this, they could turn around, but it just doesn't have that feel right now.
You mentioned Frank Gore. Frank Gore, he did have probably his best game as a Colt.
Yeah.
Andre Johnson has been absolutely, he has not shown up for this team. Poor Rob over here has him on his fantasy team. And Rob, how many points did he give you?
Well, I stashed him away this week, but yeah, he was big fat zero.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I really don't. Dante Moncrief is clearly the number two there. You know, Philip Dorsett gets a lot of plays. He had a 35-yard touchdown, I believe. So I don't know why. I don't know how they can't incorporate him into this offense.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to touch on him in our next little segment there. But yeah, he's. I don't know. He may be. I don't want to say that he's done, but he looks done.
That is shocking to me.
Adam Vinatieri still hasn't kicked a field goal this season either, which I think is that's funny. I think that's just got to be brought up. Like, that's just 0-2 on the year.
That's huge. That really is huge. I mean, you're talking about arguably the greatest kicker in NFL history, and yeah, no, he has done nothing in 2015.
It's the Vinatieri watch. I think that's got to be a weekly thing. We just got to keep taking note of that every week that he doesn't make one.
I like that, Rob.
All right, so now let's get to our weekly segment now, Studs, Duds, and Surprise. We'll start off with the studs. My stud of the week was, you know, he could have been my surprise of the week, too. Devonta Freeman comes in, no Tevin Coleman for the Atlanta Falcons going against the Cowboys. And Devonta Freeman goes off for 141 yards and 3 touchdowns, weekly leaders in both categories. He was tied with 3 touchdowns with Charles after Monday night. But, you know, a Cowboys front seven that dominated the Eagles' rushing attack the week before, and you know, the combination of Julio Jones out there, Devonta Freeman, like, he really stepped it up. I did not see this guy being, you know, an elite back, and he had a few – those touchdown runs, he had one from about 10 yards out that, you know, Dallas pressed the line. They looked like they were going to stuff him. They were ready for that, and he just darted right in there. He's a – you know, the speed on this guy is the footwork is crazy. I did not expect him to just surpass Tevin Coleman, but now there seems to be a pretty pretty talented running back duo in the backfield of Atlanta.
You know what? It's funny, too, because, I mean, yeah, exactly. You mentioned the fact that Tevin Coleman didn't even get to play. He got the lion's share of the carry. I mean, there was no other back that took any carries. I think Matt Ryan was the second leading rusher for the team. And you mentioned also that it could have been your surprise. I'm just going to say it from now. He actually was my surprise of the week. I think we probably should talk about this before the show, before we get on here. But yeah, just to repeat kind of what you said, I mean, he had a great game. If this Atlanta offense can have a great running game to go along with that Matt Ryan passing attack to Julio Jones, I mean, look out. This is going to be a really, really good offense.
Yeah, we should mention, too, that they still don't have Devin Hester back in the lineup.
Hey, that's a good point. Great point.
And this Atlanta team, we'll talk a little more about them in the next bit. But
3-0.
Yeah, 3-0, and a great game for Devonta Freeman. Who's your stud of the week, Dwayne?
My stud of the week has to be A.J. Green. He had a game. I mean, 10 receptions, 227 receiving yards, and 2 touchdowns.
One of which 80 yards in the winner.
That's right. You know what? I have to give some credit to Andy Dalton. He played a great game as well, but he doesn't look nearly as good if A.J. Green isn't the one catching those balls. And not to mention, I mean, he was playing against Jimmy Smith. Now, Jimmy Smith kind of got burnt by Amari Cooper in week 2, so I'm starting to wonder if maybe either Jimmy Smith has regressed or he hasn't 100% recovered after that injury last year.
Yeah. I think that whole defense, really, without Suggs in the lineup, everybody gets a little...
And it puts pressure on those cornerbacks.
Right. Especially.
Absolutely. But I don't want to take anything away from A.J. Green. You're talking about a top-5 receiver who put on a show. I mean, he undressed that Baltimore secondary. And, look, if he's playing like this, I don't see any way that Andy Dalton to A.J. Green connection can be stopped anytime soon, especially in the AFC North.
Yeah, and he matched it up. You know, Steve Smith had a big game on the other side, and he kept coming.
Yeah, great wide receiver battle.
So A.J. Green had two touchdowns in the fourth quarter. One of them an 80-yard touchdown. That's so big. It's hard for a receiver. We notice a receiver being that clutch. We usually credit that to the quarterbacks, but you're absolutely dead on. A.J. Green, big game. All right, so duds of the week. Now, we touched on mine a little earlier. Andre Johnson. Andre Johnson, 0 catches. I had one fantasy team. I should mention, I play on a few fantasy leagues.
Sure.
Pay more attention to some than others. But I had one team that I had 3 players start and register 0 points. One of those players was Andre Johnson.
Oh, man.
He has yet to break 5 catches or 30 yards through 3 weeks.
Wow.
And no catches against the Tennessee Titans team. You know, I mentioned that he may be out and he may be done. And, like, he came into the Colts in training camp, and he said, I'm so impressed with Andrew Luck. This is the best player I've ever played with. And now, you know, he can't even get open. Like, he can't register a target.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, Dwayne Allen was out of the game as well, so you figured that he might see more targets, more chances for receptions, but I don't know what it is. Is it something maybe he just doesn't know the playbook well enough?
I don't know. That sounds weird because for a receiver, there's only so many things that you're really going to be asked to do, especially a receiver like Andre Johnson, who's going to be – you're not going to line him up in the slot or anything. He's going to play on the outside. And, you know, maybe the answer is to move him to the slot. We've seen that success with Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona, moving to the slot. I don't know. They've got to do something with Andre Johnson, though, there.
And I agree.
He's been but he's got to take it on himself. This guy was, you know, a few years ago considered one of the – best receivers in the game, and just like that, he's totally dropped off.
I know, it's a sad thing to see that. Yeah, I agree. My dud has to be Colin Kaepernick, the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not gonna lie, this game was hard to watch, so it wasn't the main one I was watching at 4 o'clock, but
hey,
wow.
All those 4 o'clock games this weekend were brutal.
They were rough. They were. This is his stat line. 9 for 19, 67 yards passing, and 4 interceptions. Yeah. And a lot of the times, I brought up the fact earlier that Marcus Mariota had one interception that really wasn't his fault. It was a tip ball that was in the receiver's hands, and then he just kind of let it fall to the Colts defensive back. But every single one of those 4 interceptions by Colin was his fault. I don't know if they were just misreads. I mean, there were plays where he literally, it looked as if, like Tyrann Mathieu, I think, had one. I mean, it just looked as though he was throwing it to those defensive backs. He just wasn't seeing the underneath coverage at all. I don't understand what it was. The commentators kind of brought up the fact that maybe he's just not seeing the field properly from the pocket, and he's got a lot of criticism for his inability to be that pocket passer. But, I mean, this is kind of getting out of hand. We've seen him regress year in, year out since that breakout year with Jim Harbaugh when they went to the Super Bowl. But since then, he really has not lived up to the expectations we kind of had for him. These four I can't say it enough. These 4 interceptions were brutal.
No, they were, and they started off, you know, 2 back-to-back pick sixes.
Exactly.
To start the game off. You're out of the game basically from the get-go. They only ended up scoring 7 points in total, so, you know, they were basically out of that game before Arizona even got the ball.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because we all overreacted to week one. We saw what they did against the Vikings on that second Monday night game, and we kind of thought, okay, you know what, maybe this 49ers team isn't as bad as we kind of thought going into the season. But after these last two performances, I mean, we saw what the Pittsburgh Steelers did to them defensively, their lack of offense in that game, and we saw here what Kaepernick was able to muster against what is a good Cardinals defense, don't get me wrong, but I mean, average quarterbacks have to do better than this.
And they, you know, they're kind of doing like what they were doing last year, I find. Carlos Hyde only had 15 carries during this game. You know, I know that the Niners were down and, like, they were trying to come back. But at some point, you know, when you're throwing for 67 yards in a game, like, you got to go with your strength at some point and just work on that. Because that's what they won the Monday Nighter with, was Carlos Hyde running the ball and Colin Kaepernick working off of that play action. So, you know, a lot of this coaching staff, while Jim Harbaugh is gone, a lot of this coaching staff is the same. A lot of these guys are just, you know, Vic Fangio left as well, but a lot of these guys are just, you know, promoted linebackers coach or quarterbacks coaches to offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, and it's kind of looking like a lot of the same.
Yeah.
And this is the second blowout loss for the Niners. You know, we had a little bit of, I admit I had some hope for them after week one, but.
So did I, I'm not going
to
lie.
Is it an option for them to go to Blaine Gabbert, like going forward for the Niners, or is that ridiculous?
I'm a little bit surprised that we didn't see any Blaine Gabbert, honestly.
In that game.
Yeah, because.
How much worse can you play?
Exactly. Like how much, you might as well let your backup get, even if he's that bad, at least get him some experience.
Yeah, we saw Philip Rivers leave his game. Just, I guess, due to poor performance and just because the score was out of reach. And we saw his backup come in. I don't know why, like you said, Rob, that they couldn't have just thrown Blaine Gabbert in there. So,
Blaine Gabbert, Colt McCoy's there as well, I believe. Or no, sorry, he's – no, not – never mind. That's my That's a while ago now.
Way back, playback.
Way back. All right, so let's go to our surprises. You mentioned yours, so get to it off the top.
Yeah, I mean, Devontae Freeman. I mean, I don't have to repeat what we said. I mean, he had a great game against the Cowboys, and I can't wait to see him and Tevin Coleman reunited in that backfield. I want to see how this offense can look when everybody is healthy.
All right. And my surprise of the week is Alfred Blue. Alfred seemed like he kind of lost that Adrian Foster fill-in job, but he didn't do anything the first 2 weeks. He goes off for 139 yards and a touchdown, helps the Texans get their first win of the year. This guy was supposed to be, you know, we talked in the preseason about this guy, you know, he was going to be this good fantasy sleeper, and we didn't really see it the first few weeks, and I actually thought that this would be the week that Chris Polk would come out, and we'd see more Chris Polk and more Jonathan Grimes for the Houston Texans, but Blue kind of tightened up his boots and he got it done.
So yeah, no, I like that. I like that. Yeah, because I mean the thing too is that, I mean they, like you said, Chris Polk was kind of waiting in the wakes, and I thought that maybe they may make a trade for like a Christian Michael, but obviously he went somewhere else. So yeah, no, good for him. Good for him. I mean, Arian Foster could be coming back sooner than expected. So
yeah, so for the Texans to get, if they can get Foster back and Blue, you know, still chipping in with 100 yards a game, that's big because their offense really hasn't been rolling so far, and they need that rushing game to get going.
Yeah, no kidding. That game against Tampa Bay was another tough one to watch.
Yeah, and now we'll get to our we're not going to go over our power rankings too much like we did last week because we both agreed, you know, we don't really have any changes.
No.
My top three still looks Packers, Patriots, Cardinals. And
yeah, for me, it's Packers, Patriots, Broncos. I think that our three, our number three spot, we disagreed about it before, but I think it's fair to say that if we were to have expanded this to a top five, we'd both have.
We both have those teams up there.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to touch, both those teams had big weeks and kind of won in games. You know, did what they needed to do to get games done.
Right.
The Detroit-Denver game was kind of an ugly one for Detroit, but
But
hey, Denver, that just kind of proved how hard it is to beat the Denver Broncos.
Exactly, and we talked about the Cardinals. The Cardinals' offense looks incredible so far. So, yeah, this is, like I said, if we were to extend this to like a top five, we'd both have our respective top three or number three team in there. But I guess we should kind of mention the fact that if we were to expand it to a top five, we'd probably have new teams in there after what we've seen so far, right?
Yeah, we've got 3 weeks in the books now. We've seen a lot from different teams, and we've got some kind of teams to look out for right now.
Right. For me, it has to be the Cincinnati Bengals. I mentioned the fact that my stud is AJ Green after week three, and this team might be one of the most complete teams in the entire NFL. Their defense has played great. I know they gave up 24 points to the Ravens, but, you know, they really are playing great. I mean, that was on the road. Andy Dalton has a history of struggling against the Baltimore Ravens, especially in Baltimore.
Especially in the fourth quarter.
Exactly. And he had a fantastic game. AJ Green, absolute stud. Yeah, I think, and not to mention, something that we've always kind of talked about, and I think we mentioned this with Kyle when he was in, is the fact that they've always struggled to have that number two receiver alongside AJ Green. Marvin Jones is healthy now, and he's playing great. So
Tyler Eifert has really picked up that role, too.
Exactly, Tyler Eifert. So we haven't seen this collection of talent together at one time due to injury. So to have them all healthy, the offensive line is playing great. The 1-2 punch of Hillen and Giovanni Bernard is really paying dividends for this team. So this is a team that you got to look out for. I mean, they have a stranglehold on that AFC North now. So, yeah, I think the Cincinnati Bengals will be a tough team to beat.
All right. And my team, like my stud, plays for the Atlanta Falcons. Falcons, I said the last week that they were going to come out too cocky against the Cowboys on defense, and that's what they did. But they cleaned it up.
Right.
And they picked it up on offense more than that as well. So, I think, you know, if you look at this team, with the exception of giving up 28 points in the first half to the Cowboys, defensively they have been so much better than they were last year. Dan Quinn's really got them going, and we saw that. You know, I think that in the second half they shut out the Cowboys, and you really saw they made adjustments, and that's what the Seahawks did under Dan Quinn too. They make little adjustments and get their team going, and now with Devonta Freeman playing well, Tevin Coleman coming back, and Julio Jones on the outside, maybe get Devin Hester in there as well. This is a really tough team to beat, and you know, just tough team to stop. They're going to be really, really explosive. Both the anytime you can mix the run and the pass in together is so big for a team.
You talk about the adjustments they make on defense going into second halves, but let's not forget the fact that, you know, these past two games they've come back in the fourth quarter. So their offenses, you know, they've made adjustments offensively as well to get back into these games and, you know, ultimately win them. I mean, Julio Jones, we saw them kind of move him around in the second half against the Cowboys to make sure that he could get open. And I mean,
yeah, and that worked out well, because in the first half, sure, the Cowboys were doubling up Julio Jones just like teams should be.
Right.
And if you don't know where he's going to line up, that becomes a lot more difficult when you're calling a defense. So they, you know, you're absolutely right. They made an adjustment. They went to play action more. They ran it on a couple times when it looked like they might pass. And when you have a guy like Devonta Freeman who's got such quick feet and can get down the field so fast on those draw plays and little quick screens and things, that adds a new dimension to your team. And, you know, I think the Atlanta Falcons are off to a, you know, off to a 3-0 start, just like the Carolina Panthers in their division. But when you look at those, compare those teams, I heavily would favor the Atlanta Falcons in the matchup between those two.
I agree. I mean, the Carolina Panthers, it's literally, that offense is literally Cam Newton and Greg Olsen.
Yeah, just Cam Newton just dragging them along.
Right, yeah. Now. I mean, credit to him for doing that, but we'll see how much longer that can last.
Yeah. All right, and before we wrap up the show, we want to get to our Thursday Night Football predictions, because we've just been kind of throwing them out there, saying like, oh yeah, I thought Denver was going to win. Or and so, you know, let's get some credibility down for this one. Now, the Ravens are playing the Steelers. Steelers with no Ben Roethlisberger, short week. That's so big. But Joe Flacco came out after the Bengals game and said the Ravens don't believe in themselves right now. So this is a big game for the Ravens, I think. And like we mentioned, no Ben. So Mike Vick's going to have an adjustment to make. I think the Ravens take this one. I think it's kind of a sloppy one because it's a Thursday nighter, and I go 2013 for the Ravens.
Okay, yeah. This is definitely going to be a sloppy game because obviously it's a Thursday night game. There's less time to practice and prepare. This running game for the Baltimore Ravens has to get going. I think Justin Forsett might have had 13 yards on like 10 carries or something like that. I mean, literally, I was talking to Rob about this off air. The only thing they have going for them is literally Joe Flacco throwing the ball to
Crockett Gilmore.
Well, him, but I mean, the biggest thing is Steve Smith, yeah, throwing it to him and then just hoping that he breaks tackles and goes off for, you know, a bunch of yards after the catch. Yeah, this offense, Mitch, you mentioned it earlier in the preview and, you know, during some of these recap shows, the fact that they really don't have a secondary option alongside him right now, and it's hurting this offense. But I guess it's tough because I really worry that this offense won't be able to do much. And if Vic can prepare and do enough for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have a boatload of talent around him, I think that they could win. But I'm going to say that, and I hate to do this because it's almost like a cop-out, but I think the Ravens need it more. And I'm going to say that they take it, like, yeah, 17-14.
You know what? If the Steelers had a bye this week and this game was going on in another week, I'd actually maybe take the Steelers if I thought Vic would have more time to prepare. But 3 days, you know, for a guy who just wasn't expecting to play this year, I would doubt. I don't think that's going to be enough.
Yeah. And, I mean, it is in Pittsburgh. So that's a factor, too. If it was in Baltimore, I think I'd be a bit more,
you know.
Man, I'm thinking about this. And I'm going to stick with it. Ravens, yeah. 17-14.
All right, 17-14. There you go. I mean, yeah, I think this is going to be tough. I think Le'Veon Bell probably gets a touchdown in there somewhere. Right. And maybe Antonio Brown breaks a couple. But we haven't really seen Mike Vick's arm in a while either. So we'll see what happens there. I don't expect it to be pretty.
No, not at all.
All right, so that's our episode. What's that, episode 16?
17.
17, episode 17. Wow. Between the Trenches. Remember to check us out on Facebook and Twitter, at Between Trenches, or on our new website, betweenthetrenches.com. We also have a little video fantasy feature special coming up on the Centennial Sportsnet. You can check that out on YouTube, too. We'll throw that up on our website as well.
Absolutely. Great episode 17, guys. Can't wait to get back to you for our week 4 preview. coming up soon. Take care, guys.
Let me ask you a question. Who could possibly have it better than us?
Nobody!